We discussed this morning about the life of Ramanujacharya. Gave some background of the relationship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings with the various sampradayas, and in particular the Sri Sampradaya, and the role of Ramanujacharya. I'll describe something about this also. We identify the four sampradayas with, well, Sri Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya, because these four personalities received the teachings directly from the personality of Godhead. But obviously there's a big gap of time between Lord Brahma and Madhvacharya, or the goddess of fortune, and Ramanujacharya. What was in between, say in particular in the Sri Sampradaya, generations and generations of perfected souls giving teachings, following those, the Alavars in the Sri Sampradaya, come Jumunacharya, Alabhandar, the great victorious personality. And the function of Ramanujacharya, or Madhvacharya, or Vishnu Swami, or Nimbarkacharya, is that they gathered the previous teachings coming in disciplic succession and systematically structured them so that particularly there was a comprehensive understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. And this Vedanta Sutra has it's in four parts. This is discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having his little chit-chat with Prakashananda Saraswati, that the Vedanta Sutra has these three divisions, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary on that Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And all the Vedas can be understood in those three categories of tattva, Sambandha tattva, Abhideya tattva, Prayojana tattva, the truths in relation to those three topics. So Ramanujacharya took the teachings of Jamunacharya, which were the compilation of the previous teachings of the other predecessor great acharyas and perfected souls, and systematically presented them. If you remember, the one of the three fingers of Jamunacharya that extended once again was that he would compile Sri Bhasya, the commentary on Vedanta Sutra, according to the goddess of fortune and the teachings that she had given. So systematizing what was already there. They didn't create anything that wasn't already there. Just in a very thorough, tight, waterproof, bulletproof, comprehensive system, structure, something that could answer any question systematically. So Ramanujacharya did that. It was one of the vows that he took to Jamunacharya. And we'll hear this evening how that took place. A little bit. But where we ended up the discussion this morning was Ramanujacharya is accepting of sannyas. So rather than repeat that lila, arrangements were made by the Supreme Lord that as it was with the previous teacher that he had, Yadava Prakash, who was an unfit person to study under, Also, his wife was just offensive. Her behavior and her attitude was just the opposite of the teachings of Vaishnavism and the teachings of Ramanujacharya. And she systematically offended people rather than humbly served everybody. So he very brilliantly made an arrangement for her to go back home to her father to attend her younger sister's wedding and accepted sannyas. Right before Lord Varadaraja, and being very inspired by his purity and his mood of devotion to the Supreme Lord, Kanchi Purna gave him a nice sannyas name, Yati Raj. Very appropriate. And under the encouragement of Kanchi Purna, he began presenting the teachings that he had learned from Mahapurna. And in course of time, he gathered students because he was such an empowered and brilliant presenter of the conclusions of the Sri Sampradaya. And there are his two first disciples. One was his nephew, Dasharati, and you'll hear something in detail about Dasharati. He was particularly scholarly, super scholar. But he took shelter under Ramanujacharya to be trained in Vaishnava teachings. And the second disciple was Kuresh. And again, you'll hear something further about Kuresh. And Kuresh had this amazing memory, super memory, which became very useful at a certain point in time. By the time Ramanujacharya became fixed in the sannyas order, some years had passed when his teacher, former teacher, Yadava Prakash, was in his heart feeling very disturbed about the bad behavior that he had displayed towards Ramanujacharya. I mean, his attempt to kill him, bad behavior. And at the same time, he was proud. So to make proper amends for that terrible mistake was something that was hard for his heart to do. And then there was another force that was pulling on him, and that was his whole life. His excellence, that which he was proud of, was his learned scholarship in Shankaracharya's teachings. And here his young student now had his own school, just as he had sent him to have his own school, and was eclipsing his own teachings with Vaishnava teachings. So he was conflicted. And mothers have a way of knowing how their sons are feeling, so she knew that Yadava Prakash, his mother, knew that Yadava Prakash was very disturbed. So she spoke with him about what was the cause, and he disclosed what the cause was. So she just meditated upon that notion, and one day she went to the temple to have darshan of the deity. And as she was entering the temple, just outside the temple, she saw near the ashram area Ramanujacharya, or Yatiraj, conducting his discourse and teachings, and she saw that he's so pure. He's literally effulgent. My son, Yadava Prakash, had this young boy as a student, but actually he should become his student. So when she returned home, she told that to Yadava Prakash, who was saying, no, I can't become the student of my student. But he knew that his mother was his well-wisher, so it didn't just say no, and he forgot it. He was in conflict within himself. And it stayed, it continued. So he went to see Lord Varadaraja himself. And when he was there, he saw Kanchipurna. Kanchipurna had this acclaim, this reputation, that he could have direct discussions with the deity and then inform people what the deity would say. He could, like, you know, the question this morning was, what's the super soul channel? So he had the super soul channel. He could dial in, and he had the password and the whole thing. So Yadava Prakash asked Kanchipurna, could you let me know? Here's the situation. He just shared the conflict. And what should I do? Can you ask Lord Varadaraja what I should do and then let me know what he says? And Kanchipurna said, when you go home, you should pray very deeply to Lord Varadaraja, and I will also. And we'll see one another again tomorrow. So prayer to the deity is very powerful in all circumstances, and again it appears in Ramanujacharya's life. So the next day, sure enough, Yadava Prakash went to see Kanchipurna, and Kanchipurna gave very strict advice, right in the middle, not this side, that side, not shades of gray, very clear, black and white. You should take shelter, Ramanujacharya. No question about it. Lord Varadaraj said, you should take that position. But he was proud, and he couldn't do it. Some days later, he had a dream, and in his dream, he saw a golden, effulgent figure who was saying the same thing. This former disciple of yours, Ramanuja, he's not just a boy or a young man. He's a saint. He's a pure personality. And you're conflicted because you're minus that purity. But in his association, you can come to that position of purity and become happy and free from your conflicts. Take shelter of him. Become his student. Become his disciple. Pride is very stubborn. He couldn't. But his heart was still conflicted. So circumstance arranged that he was passing by the road one day and he saw Yatiraj. And so he began a conversation with him and said, how can you adhere to these teachings that are so contrary to Shankara's teachings? How can you have such conviction and faith in them? Can you explain this to me? So they had a conversation, and in the conversation, Yatiraj said, I think it would be better if you asked that same question of my disciple Krish. So he spoke with Krish and asked the same thing. And Krish, non-stop, and several hours worth of quotes from scripture explaining why the conclusions were what they were. And Yadava Prakash was stunned. This is a disciple of my student. Who's instructing me? And everything that he says makes sense and has scriptural authority. Something changed in his heart through the association of a pure Vaishnav. His heart changed. And he fell, literally he fell at the feet of Ramanujacharya. He's 80 years old. He said, I've wasted all the years of my life, but finally one good thing I'm doing is surrendering unto you. Please accept me as your student and disciple. And illumine in my heart that same faith, that same understanding as your radiance is showing that you have. This is my desire. So Ramanujacharya accepted him as a disciple. He gave him the name Govinda Das. And he instructed him, for your purification, you're a scholar, write one book that describes what is the duty of a real Vaishnav. And by writing that book, what is the duty of a real Vaishnav, your heart will become illuminated. Follow this instruction. And so he did, and by the time he completed this writing, he left his body. News spread that the teacher of Yatiraj became convinced to become a Vaishnav by the disciple of Yatiraj. What a wonderful Vaishnav is Yatiraj. His fame began to spread. Because Yadav Prakash was a Ramanujacharya was placed as his student when he was a young boy because he was the most elevated scholar around. And now here he is in his old age becoming a disciple, initiated disciple of his student. So all the way to Sri Rangam this news spread. And after the departure, just as Prabhupada describes it, after the departure of a great acharya, it's not the same without that great acharya. It was difficult in Sri Rangam for the personalities to continue with the same spirit of enthusiasm and enlivenment and spiritual happiness. So they decided they wanted Ramanujacharya to come and reside and become the successor acharya to Jamunacharya. So Mahapurna was requested, his spiritual master was requested to request Ramanujacharya to come. So Mahapurna went before the Ranganath deity and offered prayers. And Ranganath, that he would be successful to fulfill this mission. And Ranganath, the deity, spoke with him. And the deity said, the son of Jamunacharya is very, very expert in singing the writings of Jamunacharya. They've been lyricized, and he was a beautiful singer. Send him to Kanchipuram and have him sing Jamunacharya's writings before the deity of Lord Varadaraj, because without the blessings of Lord Varadaraj, Ramanujacharya isn't going to come, he isn't going to leave. So he made that arrangement. Vararanga, I believe that's the pronunciation is correct, is the son's name. So he went, and day after day after day, for hours, he would sit before the deity and sing the teachings of Jamunacharya. And the deity became so pleased, he asked to give him a benediction. And his benediction was, please give your release papers. Please give your blessing that Ramanujacharya can return to Sri Rangam and become the successor of the Sri Sampradaya. So that's what happened. And when the formal welcoming of Ramanujacharya took place, Ramanujacharya went before Ranganath, and two benedictions were given by Ranganath, the deity, to Ramanujacharya. One of the benedictions was that he could cure people who had become sick or ill, unhealthy, just by his blessings upon them. And the other was that those who took shelter of him would be protected from illusion. That's a nice benediction. So now Ramanujacharya is the successor acharya in the Sri Sampradaya. And he had some affection for his cousin Govinda, the one that had told him that there was a murder plot. What happened after Ramanujacharya left Yadava Prakash was that the group continued to visit some places, and one of the places they went was Varanasi. And when they were bathing in the river, sacred river, Govinda found within the river a Shivalinga, a deity in the river. And he thought, there's some message here. So he began worshipping, with Yadava Prakash's permission, he began worshipping that deity of Lord Shiva, and in the course of time he became very strong and fixed in his attraction for worship of Lord Shiva, and he made that his life's dedication. So Ramanujacharya, now the acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, had affection for Govinda. So Ramanujacharya requested his uncle, whose name was Shailapurna, who made his residence in Tirupati, which was also known as Sri Shaila, to go to the place where Govinda was residing and see what you can do to help him become a devotee of Lord Narayan. So upon that request, Shailapurna made a visit to the place, took a number of devotees, and he was sitting in a public place giving discourse. And Shailapurna was one of the principal disciples of Jamunacharya. And so he spoke very, very beautifully. And as he was speaking very, very beautifully, Govinda was nearby gathering flowers for his deity, for his worship in the morning. You know, people do that in the morning hours. They go and gather the flowers. So he's hearing the discourse. So he sat down and spent hours listening to the discourse. And by the end of the discourse, he approached Shailapurna and said, these teachings are very wonderful. And the invitation was then there for Shailapurna to speak, and said, well, certainly you understand these teachings are very wonderful. Maybe you could explain to me who these flowers are that you're gathering. For whose worship are they? And some back and forth is for worship of Lord Shiva. And the discussion that ensued attracted Govinda, because he had grown up in Yadava Prakash's school, so he hadn't heard Vaishnava teachings. He had heard impersonal teachings. So when he became a worshipper of Lord Shiva, actually his teaching, his thought process was impersonal. Well, what's the difference between this deity, that deity? It's all one anyways. He was influenced by impersonal teaching. So as he heard the teaching of Shailapurna, He came back every day and sat and heard his classes. And in the course of some number of days, about a couple of weeks of time, he became thoroughly convinced and approached Shalapurna and pleaded with him to accept him as his disciple. So Shalapurna agreed and said, but I want you to return back to Ranganath and the association of your cousin, Ramanujacharya, because he's now the Acharya at Sri Rangam. And Govinda didn't want to go. He didn't want to say no, but he said, I don't want to leave your association. Please allow me to serve you in Tirupati and serve. And he served there for the rest of his life, very happily, serving the deity and serving his spiritual master. This is, and the example is an example of the compassion when some individual becomes the object of compassion of a great soul. It's extremely fortunate. And it may be that great soul or someone on behalf of the great soul or somehow some arrangement of the Lord that that person becomes delivered. While Ramanujacharya was in Sri Rangam, he was such a qualified, he's the Acharya, but he was receiving teachings of Jumunacharya from Mahapurna. And Mahapurna saw what a qualified, incredibly qualified personality is Ramanujacharya. So he made the recommendation, one other disciple of Jumunacharya who has learned so wonderfully the writings of Jumunacharya, he lives not far away. I request that you go and sit at his feet and hear from him. His name is Ghostipurna. So Ramanujacharya heard from Ghostipurna. What we're going to be hearing is a narration, it's two things. A narration where the five principal students or followers of Jumunacharya all gave instructions to one person, Ramanujacharya, so that that one person was the embodiment of all of those teachings. And it also, a very important component is that the teachings of Ramanujacharya were to serve the Vaishnavas. And so, although Mahapurna was his initiating spiritual master, he also received teachings and mantra from Ghostipurna and these Kanchipurna. He was the embodiment of many great personalities. Is it this very nice symmetry? Unique. So when he went to Ghostipurna, Ghostipurna had certainly heard of Ramanujacharya. So he received him very happily. And Ramanujacharya was asking him not only for teachings, but I understand there's a very special 8-syllable mantra that you have. Could you initiate me in the chanting of that mantra? Ghostipurna said, no, I can give you teachings, but I'm not going to give you that special mantra. And just to make the long narration short, 18 times over a period of months, with great sincerity and humility and purity, Ramanujacharya was begging to receive that. Because Ghostipurna said, this mantra is so special that anyone who chants it even once, what to speak of regularly, will go to Vaikuntha after this life.
well,
give me that mantra. No, I won't give you that mantra. Finally, he persuaded him, because he's so sincere and so pure. He said, but it's a secret mantra. You must promise me you'll not repeat this mantra unless I give you permission to others. Oh, I promise, I promise. And sure enough, after we received the mantra and returned to Sri Rangam, and he saw all the people that were potential candidates for going to Vaikuntha, if they simply could hear this wonderful mantra, he climbed up on a building top, called out at the top of his lungs the mantra for everyone to hear, please repeat after me. And did it several times. That was very good. Let's hear it again. And more people gathered and gathered, and they were very, very happy. But when Gostipurna heard, you promised. And you broke your promise. Do you know what this means for breaking your promise in this way? You'll go to hell. And Ramanujacharya said, this mantra, you instructed me. I was going back to Sri Rangam and I was ready to follow this promise I kept, I gave to you. But I was thinking, it's so powerful. Why should I just have this mantra and not others have this mantra? So for just one little person to have to go see hell when so many other persons can go to Vaikuntha, I thought, I shall do that. And he said with such sincerity and compassion and purity that Gostipurna was moved. He said, actually, what you're saying is right. The level of compassion that you have and purity that you have, I should become your student. And he got down as if to pay his obeisances, and Ramanuja said, no, you're my spiritual master. And I've violated your instruction, you should punish me. No, you're very elevated. And I should learn from you how to be so compassionate. And Gostipurna continued to instruct Ramanujacharya in spiritual teachings that he had learned from Ramanujacharya and from Jivanacharya. Both Mahapurna and Gostipurna entrusted their sons to Ramanujacharya to become his students and disciples. Now there was, of his two disciples, we mentioned the first two were Kuresha and Dasarati. Kuresha had asked Ramanujacharya to explain to him the meaning of the 1866 Bhagavad Gita. And so he explained it to him. And Dasarati, great scholar, said, I understand you've given this explanation to Kuresha. Could you give the same explanation to me? What is the deep meaning of this verse? He said that Ramanujacharya said the deep meaning of any verse, what to speak of this verse, can only be understood by one who is very humble. And although you're very, very learned, you're a little proud of your scholarship. So before I will instruct you in this verse, I want to see that you become humble. So I will devise a means by which you can become humble. The Supreme Lord will make an arrangement that will become clear to me, and I will give you this instruction, how to practice humility. So a whole situation unfolded where some female disciple came to Ramanujacharya complaining about some problem at home. And her father-in-law was never satisfied because she had to go 1 mile away to get water to prepare the meal. And the mother-in-law was faulting her, why you can't do more? And I can't take it. And my father-in-law, mother-in-law, I want to go home. What should I do? And Ramanujacharya turned to Dasarathi and said, I have just a solution for you. He'll go to the home and he'll fetch all the water and he'll do all the cooking and everything will be nice at home. And Dasarathi could understand. This was the plan of Ramanuja, just to teach him humility. Because he's this vastly learned scholar, but he's going to go to some buddy's home that because there's a little in-law dispute going on, and he's going to be the cook to solve the dispute. But he went because it was the instruction of Ramanujacharya. And he stayed there for 6 months being a cook in somebody's home, going 1 mile to gather the water for the cooking. And he just did it very happily. Then one day in that same village where the Dasarathi was doing the cooking, one traveling pundit came through and he was giving discourse on Bhagavad Gita, and he was giving renderings of Bhagavad Gita that were blatantly impersonal. And Dasarathi happened to be in the audience on that occasion, on one occasion. And he stood up and said, you're giving the wrong explanation to these people of what is the message of Bhagavad Gita. And he corrected him. And the learned pundit said, who are you? I understand you're a local village cook here, and what do you know about Bhagavad Gita? You know, just go home and do your cooking, use your skill in that way. It was insulting. But Dasarathi didn't take it as an insult. He just continued speaking. And as he spoke, the scholar listened. And as the scholar listened, he was very impressed. He said, you're a cook. Where did you learn all this? Very elevated philosophy. He said, I'm a disciple of Ramanujacharya, the Acharya in Sri Rangam. And he sent me here to do some service so I could learn humility. He said, well, you've certainly learned humility. You didn't even become agitated when I insulted you. Your very qualities are attractive. What to speak of your explanation of the scripture. I'm going to go to Sri Rangam right now and implore Ramanujacharya to allow you to return and take shelter under his lotus feet and be further trained by him. So the scholar went to Sri Rangam and did just as he said. And Ramanujacharya was very, very pleased to receive the report and explained. So this is the punchline. He explained that spiritual knowledge cannot be received unless one's heart is in a proper humble mood. So now that Dasarathi, he has the capacity for learning, but his heart was not sufficiently humble. Now that his heart has become soft and humble like that, I can instruct him in the fullness of spiritual understanding. Ask him to return. One more of the disciples of and followers of Jamunacharya was also, he became an instructor for Ramanujacharya, and that was the son of Jamunacharya, Vararanga. So he asked Vararanga to please instruct me in the principle of Dharma. Sounds pretty elementary, right? Please instruct me in the principle of Dharma. He's the Acharya. Please instruct me in the principle of Dharma. Because you're the son of Jamunacharya. Surely you must know this. for 6 months, Varadaraja would not, Vararanga wouldn't give him an answer. So he just, Ramanujacharya just continued to serve him in a humble way. And after 6 months, I'm going to read what he explained. Now that I see that your mood is fully receptive, everything about Dharma will be understood if one has realization of the following verse. The person who sees his spiritual master as the personification of the Lord himself and who serves his guru perfectly with no other desire, just as you have served me, he is the greatest knower of Dharma. This is the limit of my understanding. That was his answer. Now think about it. Isn't it very similar to what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes about Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, and how does one get fixed intelligence? One gets fixed intelligence when one has implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. Essentially the same teaching. The language is, and the approach is slightly different, but it's the same message. That's the essence of Dharma. Same as Krishna's instruction in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had his idea of what was his duty in that circumstance and what shouldn't be his duty. But when he fully surrendered unto Krishna, then he had the capacity to understand fully what is his duty. And then he was prepared. Very important instruction. In Srirangam, there was a chief priest, one in charge of the worship of the deity. And the chief priest was also proud, especially of his position, because he was the chief priest. And in course of time, as Ramanujacharya became more prominent and more prominent and more prominent, he became agitated. He became envious of his prominence. We find this happening as Ramanujacharya's prominence grows further and further. Other persons saw him. Prabhupada described like this also about the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, for Krishna Consciousness. He said, the fact that there are persons who are opposing this movement, this is very good. It's a sign showing that it's gaining prominence. It's catching the attention of other people. And they're becoming envious. This is a sign of our success. And conversely, you know, one should not expect when something is very successful that there'll be no opposition. It draws the attention of envious people to make opposition. So the high priest became so envious that he thought, I have to get rid of Ramanujacharya. So he shared his thoughts with his wife, who had a similar disposition as himself. He said, let's invite Ramanujacharya to have lunch at our home and we'll poison him. Do you know where's the poison? She said, yes, I know where's the poison. So, diabolical plan. And it was arranged explicitly that the priest would be away from the home when the event happened. But when it came to, when she saw, when the wife of the priest saw Ramanujacharya come to their home and saw his effulgent personality and refined qualities and abject humility and purity, she broke down And she told him the whole plan. He said, if you all value your life, don't eat this food. There's enough poison in this food to kill 10 men. You should leave here at once. Ramanujacharya was shocked. How is this possible? The chief priest wants to murder me? So he went back to his home and received prasad from the devotees and didn't say anything. He was just understanding, what is the Lord's plan? And when the priest came back and asked his wife what happened, she said, I couldn't do it. So he didn't become angry with his wife. He thought, oh, sentimental woman. But I'll make another plan and I'll kill him. So his other plan was, when Ramanujacharya came in to take darshan of Ranganath, he would bring him a little vessel that had spiked charanamrita, poisoned charanamrita. And Ramanujacharya, when he received it, he knew, or he assumed, that it was poisoned. So he offered a prayer to Ranganath, and it's like Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he drank poison, knowingly. And as he was leaving the presence of the priest and the deity, he was feeling empowerment from the deity, and he started moving with vigor. And the priest thought, ah, the poison is working. Just a few more steps and he'll be finished. And the evening passed, and Ramanujacharya sat in some place where the public was, and he was in a meditation of ecstasy, and there's a crowd of people. And when the priest came and saw Ramanujacharya radiant like molten gold, and the crowd of people just amazed to see this state of consciousness that he was exhibiting, he fell at his feet and confessed everything, right, for everyone to hear what he had done, and begged for Ramanujacharya's forgiveness. Ramanujacharya forgave him. The priest said, how can you look with such kindness on a man as abominable as myself? The glory of yours will be proclaimed by men for all time to come. Ramanujacharya was just pleased that this envious spirit of the priest had now been driven away, and instead he became perfectly humble and surrendered. And he forgave him completely. There's so many nice things in his life. There was a traveling, like Keshava Kashmiri type of person, a traveling pundit, that his program was to debate. And he was very expert at debate. We know some people like that. Very expert at debate. And he just argued and argued and argued with people. So he came to challenge Ramanujacharya for debate. He said, oh, I've heard you're the most advanced scholar in the land. Let's have a debate. And Ramanujacharya said, let's not have mundane wrangling. I'll just surrender. Say that you conquered me in a debate. Is that all right? I'll sign a little piece of paper saying you've defeated me. He said, very well, you must sign that it says that the impersonal Brahman is supreme. and all this idea that you have of God being a person is all fallacious. Well, Ramanujacharya couldn't buy that one. So they began discussing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it went for 17 days. And neither was victorious. Ramanujacharya was feeling very discouraged that this personality who is blaspheming the Supreme Personality of Godhead is traveling throughout the land and contaminating the minds of people with his terrible philosophy, impersonalism. So he went to Ranganath and offered prayers to the deity. Please give me the strength to bring this terrible influence to a checked position. Only by your mercy can this happen. And he felt some reciprocation with Lord Ranganath. And the next day when they met, he was in such a state of ecstasy that the Yajnamurti was the debater's name. He said, something has overcome you, and I'm surely going to be overpowered if there was any debate. I just accept defeat. And he surrendered to him, just like that, after 7 days of... The debaters don't do that. He was moved by the spiritual purity of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya said, I had offered prayers to my deity at home. He had a deity at home he called Devaraj. So he named the devotee Devaraj Muni. Initiated him. And after some days, he wanted to test whether pride was gone from his heart. Sometimes tests come, my dear devotees. This one was deliberate. Ramanujacharya tested him by saying there were some persons that had come to take shelter of him for initiation. He said, better you go to Devaraj Muni and seek his shelter. And when they went to Devaraj Muni, he protested. He came running to Ramanujacharya. He said, why are you doing this to me? I'm with all sincerity, I want to go beyond and leave behind all of that pride. And how will that work if persons come to me and offer me praise and honor and flattery and fall at my feet? Please, don't do it to me. You accept them. They came to take shelter of you. And Ramanujacharya said, I was just testing you. I wanted to see if in fact your heart was completely, because it's the duty of the spiritual master, he said, to completely remove from the heart all impurity. So I was testing you. Now I can see you're free from this disease of pride. You've completely given it up. Two other pastimes I'd like to describe. One of them is connected to Ramanujacharya wanting to make a visit to Tirupati from Sri Rangam. He had studied and taught three times the same scripture that he received from Jamunacharya. Because sometimes when we read a book, we think, oh, that was very nice, what's next? And then we read another book and we think, oh, that was very nice, what's next? But it's a whole other thing that you read the book, and then you read the same book, and you read the same book, and you read the same book, and you know, each time you read it, you find new things that you didn't understand before, and you're able to enter into it more deeply. If even one of Srila Prabhupada's books we could become proficient in, thoroughly understand. Prabhupada said, even one verse, even one line, even one word, we can actually understand one word. The whole meaning of Bhagavad Gita is there, everything that you need to know. But we have this, whatever you want to call it, tendency, disease, or, you know, something new. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he would go to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit, he would hear the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj again and again, 100 times. How many times have we heard Dhruva Maharaj Leela? Or the story of Prahlad Maharaj and how many different ways Hiranyakashipu tried to kill him, and the benedictions that Hiranyakashipu tried to get from Lord Brahma to become immortal. And we heard so many times. Lord Chaitanya would hear it again and again, 100 times, and after hearing it, he would say, say it again, say it again. This is where the nectar comes, when you go very deeply to the subject matter and relish the subject matter, and realization starts coming, just like, you know, chanting the holy name. How many times have we chanted Krishna's name? And how much are we tasting Krishna? It's not how many times you chant is determines how many times you taste, or how much you're able to taste Krishna, but how deeply you can enter. And experience the pure holy name. So, Ramanujacharya took one text of Yamunacharya and taught it 3 times from beginning to end, and by the time he reached the 3rd time, there was reference in the text to Venkateshwara. And so he wanted to go see the deity of Venkateshwara in Tirupati. So he started to make a journey. And in the course of the journey, there were 2 disciples where he felt he could stay, spend the night. So there was a small group of devotees that were traveling with him. And of the 2 disciples, one of them had a large house and had sufficient wealth to accommodate Ramanujacharya and his entourage. So he sent 2 disciples ahead, and the 2 disciples went to this wealthy disciple's home, Yagnesha. And Yagnesha was so excited. He said, oh, Ramanujacharya is going to come to my home. Let me make all the arrangements. And he, in his excitement, he completely forgot to take care of the 2 persons who were fatigued from their journey and didn't even offer them anything. So they returned back to Ramanujacharya and said, this is the situation. He's very enthusiastic to receive everybody, but he was just neglecting us. So Ramanujacharya said, let's not go there. One who has neglected my devotee with the idea that they want to serve me but neglect my devotee, I don't want to have them become our host. We'll go to the other disciple's home. And the other disciple, his name was Varadacharya, named after Varadaraj, and his wife's name was Lakshmi. They were a Brahmin family, but very poor. And the practice that Varadacharya had was each day after his morning puja and everything, he would go door to door, perform madukari in whatever it was that he would accept. In half the day he would bring that home and his wife would prepare lunch. And that was their arrangement. They had next to nothing. So when the messengers came from Ramanuja's party to inform Ramanujacharya would like to stay, she immediately said, yes, yes, yes. This is so wonderful. We're so fortunate. The problem was she didn't even have 1 grain in the house. because they were so poor. But her mind immediately went to serving Ramanujacharya. There was one wealthy merchant in town that was very attracted by the beauty of Lakshmi, and through female messengers would send invitations. I'll provide you with so much if you come and enjoy with me. And she just sent the messengers away, just rebuked them. Get lost. But she knew the wealthy merchant had interest in her. And so she went out the back door and went to visit the wealthy merchant and said, I've decided to fulfill your desires. My guru has come and I want some grains. He said, oh, just take whatever you like. Fill up your bins and take it home, and I trust you. You're a nice Brahmin woman. I'm sure you'll keep your word. Take whatever you want, all the grains, all the spices, all the vegetables, your heart's content. So she gathered everything that she wanted and went to her home and prepared a nice, sumptuous meal for Ramanujacharya and his associates. And when her husband came home and saw Ramanujacharya having this wonderful feast at his home, he was very happy, but he was also very astonished. Where did my wife get the ingredients? So when the opportunity came, he pulled his wife to the side and said, what's happening? How did this come to be? So she told her husband everything, expecting that he was going to be very unhappy. And he was very happy. He said, I'm so blessed to have such a devoted wife who will sacrifice anything for her spiritual master. How fortunate a man can be to have such a wife. Ramanujacharya could also understand there's something very special here because this is a very poor family. So he inquired. And the husband disclosed everything, what happened. Now my wife has made this promise, and she's a Brahmin. She has to fulfill her promise. So Ramanujacharya said, there will be some leftover prasad, some remnants. Have your wife take the remnants to that wealthy merchant's home. After taking the remnants of Ramanujacharya, his heart completely changed. He said, you explained to me that you wanted all these ingredients for your Guru Maharaj. And now I understand that you fed me the remnants of your Guru Maharaj, and now I understand why he's your Guru Maharaj. I'm totally ashamed of all this propositioning I've been making of you for all these years. And I'm most honored that such a perfectly chaste lady as yourself has served your spiritual master in this way, and I'm totally shamed. I want to go and personally apologize to your husband and to your guru. She brought the merchant to Ramanujacharya's feet, who began crying at his feet, saying, what a wretched person I am. She's my worshipable mother, goddess of fortune practically. And I had these terrible thoughts. But through your association, she has become purified, and through her association, I have become purified. How powerful are you? Please forgive me. And he wanted to give wealth to the Brahmana so he wouldn't be in such difficulty in the future. And the Brahmana turned to Ramanujacharya and said, please, don't force me to accept this. Just see what it's done to this wealthy merchant. Wealth can be a terrible, destructive agent. And one can easily become proud and very hurtful towards others. I'm very happy just keeping my life the way that it is. Please don't force me to take this. Just then, Yagesh came, the other who had been neglected to spend the time at his home. And he was very repentant for the mistake that he had made. And Ramanujacharya said, he scolded him. Said the idea of serving a great personality is very nice, but if you neglect those who are Vaishnavas, they are also great personalities, and how can you be pleasing to the Lord if you neglect the service of the Vaishnavas, whatever their level of position in the Vaishnava community is? Please never make this mistake again. And because of your humility and submission, on my way back from Tirupati, I'll visit your home. The last time-wise, there's much more in his life, but one of the leelas that I like the most is Dhanur Das and his wife. There was the first meeting of them was when there was a procession, when Ramanujacharya was moving through a crowd. Anyway, there was without the detail, there was a very attached materialistic man of beautiful features and a beautiful wife. Or girlfriend, not married. Completely falling over each other. You know, how they, you know, fixed in trance, looking at each other. Ornamented with the finest of ornaments, wearing the finest of clothing. He's holding an umbrella to keep her from the shade of from the heat of the sun, and simply staring at her beautiful eyes, and she's staring at his beautiful eyes, and they're just like in the midst of a crowd like nobody else is there, completely madly in love with each other. And by the mercy of Ramanujacharya, they both became very nice devotees. And as they became very nice devotees, those who were previously very nice devotees were becoming a little envious. Why is Ramanujacharya giving so much attention to these new devotees? In fact, they're from a lower caste, from bad background, and they started thinking those thoughts. And then began speaking those thoughts to Ramanujacharya. He said, I'll give consideration for your words. So he decided his leading sannyas disciples, who were very proud of how pakka they were in their brahminical ways, and he made an arrangement for those that were doubting. He said, you go into the ashram at night when they're sleeping and just, you know, move their kurta to this place and move that one's kopins to that place, and, you know, move their clothing around and see what happens when they wake up in the morning. Hey, what's going on? Somebody move my clothes. Hey, what's going on? And fighting and quarreling and arguing and bickering and... Okay. These are our renounced men. Now you go to this couple. Go to the couple in the dead of night, and steal from their home their valuable jewels and ornaments and see what happens. So on the particular night that this was supposed to happen, Dhanur Das was visiting. He was out of home. It was just his wife who was at home. So the brahmacharis came tiptoeing into their home. She was asleep. And so they started taking her ornaments one by one. And she was awake, but just lying there, and thought, these poor brahmacharis, They're coming into her home to steal. So after all the ornaments on one side of her body were taken, she turned over so they could steal from the other side. And when she turned so they could steal from the other side, they thought she was waking up and they ran. And her husband returned home. She told them what happened. He said, "Why did you do this? Why did you scare them away? I was just letting them steal from the other side. But now they're going to, you know, you could have just given it to them. Instead, now they're deprived. Why have you done like this?" So then Dhanadas came with his wife and made apology for making this mistake, that that your men couldn't take both this side and that side of her ornaments. So Ramanujacharya said, "Just see who is attached. Our sannyasis and brahmacharis and our ashram, or the householders? Because the sannyasis and brahmacharis and attached. But this couple, they're so surrendered that whatever it is that they have, they see as the property of their spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. And they simply want to serve their spiritual master and the Vaishnavas with whatever they have. This is why I'm so pleased with them. Because of their devotion. And what their birth and their caste is doesn't matter. Their devotion is unparalleled. This is what is attractive to the personality of Godhead." So there's like another 20, 25 years of his life that we haven't discussed. Ramanujacharya is a very wonderful personality. There's one king who had become a Shaivite, or not had become a Shaivite, he was an ardent Shaivite worshipper. And he was very envious of the influence of Ramanujacharya as a Vaishnava. So he also decided he wanted to kill him. And there's a whole intrigue what happened. Ramanujacharya left Sri Rangam and one of his disciples went dressed as if he was Ramanujacharya and he had his eyes poked out. He said he was going to kill him except that you saved the princess of our dynasty that was haunted by a ghost when she was young. So for that reason I won't kill you. But it wasn't even Ramanujacharya. So meanwhile Ramanujacharya was off in some other distant land. And while he was in a distant land, his purity was, although he was dressed like he was a householder, dress doesn't make the person, his purity was changing the hearts of so many people. Very, very interesting lila of Ramanujacharya's life. So the three main promises that he made, he kept. The son of Quraysh, I like to describe Quraysh's life, but Quraysh gave birth to a son, to twins, and those twins were named by Ramanujacharya as Parashara and Vyas. So one of the requests, Parashara Muni, was glorified in that way. He wrote Sri Bhasya, and he traveled extensively to preach the glories of the Lord and established not only the teachings of Vaishnavism, but also he was very much a reformer in the standards of worship. Certainly it's true today, but it was also true at the time of Ramanujacharya that while deity worship was going on, actual scriptural standards weren't being followed. People had no idea what they were doing. They were just doing something, calling it deity worship. So he established from scripture what the standards of deity worship were throughout the countryside. And then those places became Sri Vaishnava temples. And to this day, those temples are being worshipped in the standard of Sri Vaishnavism. It was a great service. that he rendered. So that's a nice way to spend the day of Ramanujacharya's disappearance, remembering, glorifying, and sharing the wonderful teachings and pastimes. This, just repeat it from this morning again, the two features of Ramanujacharya's teaching that find their way in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in a very prominent manner also. This, the teaching of the importance of serving the devotees, the service to the Vaishnavas, is such an important part of Ramanujacharya's teachings. And devotion, bhakti, that's unmixed with karma and gyan. How prominent is that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings? It's right in the principal verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Jnana karma janavratam. So we have a great debt unto Ramanujacharya for his teachings and his life. We can offer our prayers to him that we can learn from his teachings how to serve the devotees properly and how to become very fixed in our interest in serving the spiritual master, the teachings of the spiritual master, the mission of the spiritual master, worshipping the deity and offering prayers unto the deity in a very personal way, in a very meaningful way. And if our devotion is pure, the Lord reciprocates. Yayatam mam prapajyante tangstataiva pajamyaham. Any comments or questions from what we discussed? That was fast. Through the association of pure devotees, our heart changes. So why my heart is not changing so much, even though I'm getting the association of pure devotees? This is kind of a universal question. When the sun is shining and you're indoors, you can't complain. How come the sun is not shining indoors? My expression is hiding under a rock. The sun is shining, but you're hiding under a rock. How come the sun is not shining under this rock? The sun is shining. The sun sends its rays equally, liberally, everywhere. But if we hide under a rock, we're not going to be exposed. So if we're in the company of, in the atmosphere of Vaishnavas, but our heart is constricted, we're not going to receive that full benefit. The opportunity is there by being in the association of devotees. But one has to open one's heart, at least be willing. At some point, the willingness to open our hearts. And the more that we do so, the more the fullness of that potential benefit of devotee association will come. You're taking one back.
Same question?
You're on the Super Soul channel. Congratulations. What is that secret mantra that Ramanujacharya received? It's a secret. Om Namo Narayanaya is the mantra. It's a Vedic mantra, so technically Vedic mantras are not to be audibly repeated. They're to be repeated silently, like Gayatri mantras. But Ramanujacharya was so compassionate that he wanted others to hear. The story of the disciple of Ramanujacharya's Brahman's wife example was very much touching. How to get that much pure consciousness serving mood? Well, this is, you know, the general question is, how do you develop good qualities? We hear about, just like, you know, we have the association of pure devotees, we hear about serving mood how many times? How many hundreds, how many thousands, how many millions of times? Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, in the introduction, that Krishna consciousness is a kind of cultivation. Abhyasa. We practice. Practice. Prabhupada taught, practice makes perfect. So we have to practice at each of these things, and as we practice with sincerity, Krishna empowers that practice. There's an obstacle to practice, and that's our material contamination. So there has to be a strong desire to go beyond our material contamination. And there's spiritual potency in the process of devotional service that can carry us. So that experience is the experience of those who have this very special purchasing agent called faith. And when we extend or expend a little faith, we act in a faithful manner, we get some realization, and that encourages us to continue in our practice. What are the differences in the mood of devotion between Sri Sampradaya and Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya? How should we interact with devotees from Sri Sampradaya? The difference in mood in devotion is the difference between Vaikuntha and Goloka. In Vaikuntha, the mood is opulence and awe and veneration. There's no question in Vaikuntha of rasa dance or Krishna's, the cowherd boys of Krishna climbing on Krishna's shoulder and saying, it's right in Nectar Devotion, what kind of big boy, big man are you? You're easily defeated. And Krishna likes that. There's an intimacy in love of Krishna, where he's the same opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the sweetness of the loving exchange of Krishna is so strong that it eclipses the opulent feature. Now, in the practicing stage, in the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage, we are not to imitate that. But within this teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that opportunity is there. And so that's the difference in mood. Just like, you know, how we do our worship. It's kirtan. And in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, it's a pujari chants so many mantras, and everybody observes the pujari and listens to the pujari chanting so many mantras, and it's more on reverence. and our Gaudiya Vaishnava Buddhas, Kevalananda Kanda, very joyful. And it leads to that, it leads to the realm of Goloka, and in that mood of intimacy and sweetness of loving exchange. How should we interact with devotees of Sri Sampradaya? With great respect. Great respect. Well deserved. Respect. Today in the morning class you told about Ramanujacharya, even though his spiritual master wants to kill him, Ramanujacharya is still obedient to his spiritual master. What made him to develop this attitude towards his spiritual master? Well, culture. You know, the culture says you respect your teacher. And where there isn't any culture, you don't respect anybody. It's called America. You know, you don't respect anybody. The culture of no culture. Melting pot. And then you don't have any culture left. It's just like, you know, soup. It's culture to respect. And because especially you respect all living entities, and especially you respect one who is in that position of one superior. You respect mother and father, and you respect teacher, respect elders, you respect cows, respect Brahmins. Respect. And where there's no culture, it's America. Or, you know, Western culture. Okay. There's a question. The grammar is not clear. When one spiritual master is present, the disciple should not give initiations. But in the example of Govinda, the cousin of Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya's disciple gave initiation to Govinda. Well, on the order of the spiritual master, such a thing can happen. The etiquette the etiquette is one level, and when the order of the spiritual master is given, that supersedes. Should I elaborate, or it's clear? It's clear. We in ISKCON, of course this is not ISKCON, this is Ramanujacharya, but in ISKCON, we ask this question. The DBC requested our Shastra Advisory Council to answer two questions. One is, scripturally, is it okay, is it appropriate or not appropriate for a disciple to initiate in the presence of a spiritual master? And there was a two-part answer. The answer is, it can be done. There's examples of it in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. The second answer was that because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada both spoke so strongly against it, we should not do it. And then the other part was, except on the order of the spiritual master. If the spiritual master gives such an order, that's very strong. The scriptural example is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after the departure of Ishwarapuri, or just before the departure of Ishwarapuri, he sent two of his disciples, Govinda and Kashi Mishra, to come and serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, how can I accept service from a god brother? So he turned to Sarvabhauma Acharya and said, what should I do? And Sarvabhauma Acharya said, what you said is correct. However, when the order of the spiritual master is given, that supersedes this other standard of etiquette, and so you must. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay. I think I have to be selective because there's a lot of... What do we do about the time? It's 9 o'clock. Finish? Okay. This is a technical one. What's the difference between Dvaita and Vishishta Advaita philosophies? It's a good one to answer. Dvaitavad is absolute monism, where Madhvacharya taught there's differences, and his teaching embedded throughout all of his teachings is Pancha Beda. There's five essential differences: the difference between the living entity and God, between matter and God, between living entity and living entity, between living entity and matter, and between matter and matter, different types of matter. And these are absolute differences. And what Ramanujacharya taught was Vishishta Dvaita, which is there are attributes or Vishishtas that are inherently within the Supreme. The Supreme inherently possesses attributes. And sometimes those attributes are manifest. And sometimes those attributes are not manifest. Even in the manifest state, they're simply attributes of the Supreme. And when they're not manifest, they're attributes within the Supreme. So whether manifest or unmanifest, the Supreme has a relationship with his attributes that is non-different. Advaita relationship between the Supreme and his attributes. Vishishta Advaita. And Madhva's is Dvaita. They're different. Now the two most important things in Vaishnavism is recognizing that there's a Supreme Person. And distinct from the person, there are qualities or attributes or energies. It can be stated in different ways. And those energies are real. Mayavad philosophy says they're false. They don't exist. They can't exist because there's only one thing. Brahman. And as soon as you have something besides Brahman, you have two things. But you can't have two things because there's only one thing. So all there is Brahman. There's no attributes, there's no energies, there's no form, there's no quality, there's no name, there's nothing. Just one something. And Vaishnavism says there's the Supreme Something, and there's that which comes from the Supreme Something. There's energies, there's expansions, and so on. Jiva Tattva, Prakriti, and my body say no. No, no Prakriti, no Jivas, no expansions, no form. It's really boring. All there is Brahman. And right in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the basis of Brahman. There's two. Or he says, there's a field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. And one who knows the field of activities is the knower of the field of activities. So there's the field, and one who knows the field is the knower of activities. Then he says, there's a second one. There's one who's the knower of all fields, of all activities. Two knowers. There's two. One that knows this one, and one that knows all of them. Two different categories of knowers. What to speak of the field? So there's diversity. There's plurality in the spiritual world. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.